Why is it important to document, to write reports, why to have and why to have investigations? And I don't want to scare any pastor. I don't want to scare any missionary, any minister. But it's important. A few years ago, the big topic at the American Bar Association at their annual convention, which was held in Chicago, and this was 7 or 8 years ago, and I know this to be true because the president of the American Bar Association at that time was from Louisville, Kentucky. He came back and said that one of the biggest topics that year at the American Bar Association is, where are the last untapped resources for the legal profession? Where is the money? And churches was the common denominator. So that all puts you in the mind frame. And I'm not saying that lawyers are evil or bad. I'm just saying they have a profession. And let's face it, there's been some churches out here that have got away for years and years. Any denomination you want to think about. We don't hold the corner on it. Catholic Church don't hold a corner on it. The Methodists don't hold a corner on it. It's just across the board altogether. And you know what? If we're going to be good stewards of our churches, if we're going to be the shepherds of our churches, it's time that we stand up and take a responsibility biblically through Scripture and treat people right. I firmly believe that, and that's why I believe in security and believe in safety. Over a year ago, the Kentucky Baptist Convention asked me on behalf of our churches in Kentucky if I would write a safety and security program for our churches, and I did. But the first thing I did for about 2 months with the help of my associate pastor is I went and bathed myself in Scripture. Now, I'm not a theological student. I'm a police officer. I'm an old, broken-down police officer by trade, so I have to read things several times. But I'm telling you, in Scripture, I found so much support when it comes to how can we help our churches out in the area of safety and security. Documentation and proper investigations is just as important as putting locks on our doors. It's just as important as putting up ushers and greeters, training them the proper way. It's just as important as any other safety or security. And it also falls under risk management. I'm also the risk manager here at Southern Seminary. So outside of employee health, I take care of all the insurances, property, liability, crime, auto, work comp. It all comes through my office also. So, and again, for 15 years out of 23 years in police work, I was a detective, so I lived with paperwork. And so I believe in paperwork. Documentation can save you a lot of headaches, a lot of problems down the road. But again, I just want to talk real briefly. I think we all know what 1 Corinthians chapter 13 tells us, that it doesn't matter what our gifts are if you don't use them with love. And I really like what, when we were over in the Legacy Center, and I know that Dan, you know, and Dan Dumas, Mr. Dumas, was talking about from 1 Peter, how, you know, as shepherds over our flocks we don't need to be troubled over these things. These are our responsibilities. But again, how do we do things? And that's because we love Christ, we love God, and we love His church, and that's why we do it. He talked about 1 Peter 4, and then again in 1 Corinthians. One of the best scriptures I use, that one of my favorite scriptures overall when I teach this course, which is about a 4.5-hour course overall, is Nehemiah 4. And if you all are familiar with Nehemiah 4, when it talks about that in one hand we're going to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and in the other hand we're going to have our swords. You know, that's how strong that the Bible is, that we are to take care of our churches, take care of our flocks, and be leaders and do so. Why and what types of reports are important? We're going to touch on what I call incident reports, which could be everything from slips and falls, where people get hurt on your campus. An incident report could be if you're an associate pastor or a youth pastor, and one of your deacons come up to you, or somebody, or even a mother or somebody in your church comes up to you and says, "Listen, I've heard that so and so the youth pastor might very well be having an inappropriate time with a young lady. I mean, first off, you need to go to your pastor, but you know what? That needs to be investigated and it needs to be documented. It needs to be and what be documented needs to be true, it needs to be accurate, and you need to document where the information comes from. We do not have in churches confidential informants. In churches, we don't have people, an anonymous source like they do in the news media. Everything has to be true, it has to be precise, and it has to be documented where it came from. We're going to talk about background investigations, and Clark, if you don't mind, I might pull from you a little bit on that. Assessments of buildings, fire equipment, and etc. Again, I'm a big proponent that it doesn't matter what size your church is, you need to have, as part of your building committee, you all need to do assessments, physical assessments on your churches. You need to document it. You know, how often do you inspect your fire extinguishers? How often do you inspect your boilers or your other heating apparatuses? 68% of all the fires in our churches today across America are mechanical failures, which means we don't take care of our own equipment. You know what? If we did more assessments, we would find those things out. Document those. You know another reason why? It could very well save you with your insurance company. I'm not going to say it's going to save you a lot of money on premiums, but what it will do, it'll keep you from having those claims. It'll keep you from having those problems that makes your insurance premiums go up. Document these things. Insurance reports, we just talked about them. Possible criminal. Again, if you come in and you're a pastor in the church or you're the head of the deacons or the elders or whatever and you see graffiti on your church, just don't get your maintenance man or your youth pastor or somebody to wash it off. Call the police, make a report, or you make a report yourself. If you see where someone's tried to jimmy the lock on your door, again, make a report. It could be, and I'm going to give you some sample reports that we use here at Southern Seminary. You're welcome to copy them. They're in your packet here. You're welcome to use them. And so possible criminal, write those down. And keep a track of them. Court orders or other judicial documents. Does anybody know what I might be referring to here? Absolutely. Why is that important? Absolutely. Good point. Absolutely good point. Another thing, and again, we don't spread rumors. We don't spread falsehoods. But along those same lines, if the pastor, if he is counseling a young lady that's going through a very bitter divorce, and there's a restraining order or what we call an emergency protective order or a DVO, which is a domestic violence order, out against her estranged husband, it's important. The pastor needs to ask that woman, please, if you don't mind, if it's not imposing too much, bring me a copy of that. I want to see it. Because guess what happens a lot of times? Where do our pastors get hurt? It's that estranged husband sitting out there in that parking lot waiting for her to come out to jump her or hurt her or to assault her pastor because he's given her aid or comfort. I mean, across America, that happens all the time in all of our different churches. So it's important to know what these court orders say, not to spread them around. And that's where your safety and security committee comes into at your church. And it doesn't matter, again, the size of your church. If you've got one or two people that's interested in starting this committee and can control all this flow of paperwork and make sure it gets to your pastor. Your pastor needs to know everything. He needs to know what's going on in his church because he's the leader of the flock. But at the same time, it's important that you see these things and they're kept in a confidential location. We'll probably get into it here at Southern Seminary, and I look forward to hearing Clark's rendition or his interpretation, but you know, we do several hundred background checks here a year, and it goes through my office. And part of that is electronic background checks. I don't keep a hard copy, period, on this campus. When I see it electronically, if I don't need to do anything with it, the company that we do the electronic background check with, it's stored in two different areas within their company. And what's the reason for that? Because that's personal information. It's information that could cause us an exposure, and the insurance industry is what they call an exposure if it falls under the in the wrong hands. It's just private, confidence, and plus it's controlled by several aspects of federal and state law. I mean, you can only certain people is allowed to see that information that is part of an electronic background investigation. And so it's you've got to determine who can see this information. It's part of the paperwork. And then again, it's important to make recommendations to your church committees. Again, you're not going to go to your church committee in my church or my former church, not where I'm at now. It was run by a church committee. Well, you had a van committee, you had a baptism committee, you had a flyer committee, a cafeteria committee, and everybody met once a month, and then you report it to the church committee, who made the final decisions and the recommendations to the church. So now, and that's so it's important that information that isn't confidential. But it would be important that if you've got a series of things that's going on at your church, and you make incident reports that maybe over a period of time, you've had numerous windows broken out in different locations, it's important that your church committee knows that, because it might be time that we do contact the local police and bring them into the fold. You know, there has to be a central point that this information goes to. Now, I will try to get you out of here on time, but please, I've got a certain amount of information, and we'll cover as much as we can, but if you've got questions, please stop me. I'm going to fly through some of this and try to get you as much as I can, but nothing's more important than stopping and talking with you if you got a question.
The assessment of building fire equipment, I mean, in a sense, by writing a report to say we inspected all their conditions, they looked fine, but something happened within that year that protects you somehow?
If it's part of a routine maintenance that you check that type of equipment, I would only recommend to document it if something is wrong. If you've got 7 air conditioning units within your complex of buildings or building, and one of them is bad, number one, somebody on the maintenance committee or the church property committee, they need to know about it. And it's a lot more efficient, even though you might have found that air conditioner to be in fault or be bad, and you could call up Jimmy Joe over here, where Jimmy Joe might forget it, and it might not ever get done or might not get done properly. If you take 10 minutes and write that report out and get it to someone, that written report will be a lot more concise, and it's also a record. If it doesn't get done, then we know we don't need to call on Jimmy Joe anymore to fix the air conditioner. Plus, at the same time, if that air conditioner were to go faulty on us and we called in a company to fix it, and this happens quite often with our equipment in our churches, then guess what happens if that piece of equipment causes a fire? It's called transference of liability. We could probably go back on that vendor who just fixed it and say, wait a minute, what did you do to this air conditioner or this boiler or this other piece of equipment that just caught fire and caused damage to our property? So again, proper documentation is very important, especially when you're dealing with insurance and insurance claims. Yeah, but I would only document things if you found that needed attention or was a problem. Good question. I'm talking to pastors here, but if you're also a deacon, if you're a lay person, and or you've got close relationship with your pastor, these are just some pointers that I'd like to bring out. And that is, pastors, and you know what? Let's say if you're a big church and you might be a counselor, and you counsel drug addicts or rehabilitated drug addicts or alcoholics. You know what? When you make appointments to talk with people, write them down. And here's why. We are finding across America that a lot of our churches, people are coming in, and then what's happening, our staff is getting attacked. They're going in private, and they're going to pray in a room together, or they're going to talk where a lot of people can't hear them, and they get attacked. Sometimes they get attacked to the point where it causes serious physical injury and or death. So what we recommend is that if you're going to meet with someone, especially if it's, again, child custody related, abuse related, it could be child abuse related, sexual abuse related, divorce proceedings, make an appointment on a calendar, because that tracks what, if something happens to you or a member of that staff or that secretary or that associate pastor, then again, we have a record that, hey, they were to meet with so-and-so today, and that's just an investigative lead that might be able to help us find out what went wrong. So make appointments and document them. If it's no more than having one of those desk calendars and write on it that I'm meeting with Jim and Sue today, you know, on a divorce. Review all written reports with temperance. We briefly talked about that just a minute ago. There has to be someone in your church, not the person that writes the reports. There has to be someone in your church or your faith-based school that will review the reports, will know what to do with those reports, whether it's to pass them on to another person for completion or follow-up. But the important thing is with temperance. You know, again, if you read these reports, you don't need to go home and tell your wife or tell your husband or tell your boyfriend or girlfriend, listen, I saw a report today where Jim and Sue's getting a divorce. And it looks like it's going to be a nasty one. That stays there at the church. People, you know, it's one thing where we expect an expectation of privacy in our home. Where's the second most place we expect privacy? And that's in God's church. In some realms we even expect it more in our church than we do in our home. So it has to be reviewed with temperance. Don't hesitate. Do not hesitate to document known problems with those that you come in contact with. Again, if it's a homeless person that keeps coming back to your church and he starts eyeballing the windows or he starts eyeballing the doors or he's not happy with the amount of food or if he maybe knows where he sees... He comes in at a time during the service when the offering's being taken up and he knows where the tithings are being kept. Document those things. I mean, just say, this was a third time in 2 weeks that a person that I know is Joe, even if you're just a homeless person named Joe, he normally pushes a Target basket. And I'm being very serious here. You can get that descriptive. And you know what? They wear the same clothing. Describe who it is. Say, listen, I saw him out here the other night. When I locked up the church after prayer meeting, and then what happened the next morning when the pastor or the maintenance guy come in, maybe the tool shed was attempted to be broken into. Those things are important. You see where I'm going with all this? Document it and let the next person see it. And I think you mentioned you were with the Salvation Army. You all use a lot of volunteers. And good and bad. We all get good and bad volunteers. And it's very important to stay on top of them this was the third time in a month that we used Karen from this volunteer service, but she's really talking down to people. You know, that's an incident. That needs to go to the pastor. That needs to go to the head of your local Salvation. Go ahead.
The church I'm at tends to have random cars in the parking lot.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, there is. Right. But let me tell you something else that's even that you can do. Stop it. If you're parking, make sure your parking lot is well lit. You know, the last thing that a criminal wants to happen to them is be identified. They don't want anything to happen. You just came from that crime prevention. That's all you heard in there for an hour. A criminal doesn't want to do anything that gets them identified. So, yeah.
In hindsight, maybe it wasn't the smartest thing we did, but we put plates up on it. We have a huge
Okay.
marquee. We just put plate numbers up on
the marquee. Oh, do you?
Yeah.
It's unique. I like that.
We only had to do it twice.
Yeah. Coffee. It's like, thank goodness they don't write bad checks and tithe in your church, I guess.
No, we do that for a Sunday.
Do you? But you know, number one, it's you're right. By the time that black and white unit, the police roll around, they've got it stashed somewhere else or thrown out the window. What you want to do is try to prevent that. And I would encourage you to go back to your church and do that. Is get your local police, a good crime prevention person. If you don't have one already in your congregation, and get it stopped. I mean, I don't know if it's possible to block off that portion of the parking lot with whatever, but the main thing is lights, because criminals hate lights. No matter what type of criminal, they hate lights.
Well, sometimes too, you can even put the false security cameras. If you don't have the money to do the real thing,
You know, I hear that a lot, but I caution against that, because there's actually case law out here across America where people have gone into businesses or schools or other location, see the cameras, they have an expectation of some type of security, some type of rights, and they get hurt, and they go, well, whoa, I felt safe because I saw that camera. And it happens a whole lot, but you'll find that some people will recommend not to do that. But, you know, I've seen it happen. When I came here, there was false cameras up here. So it can work both ways for you. The best thing to do, which is not, you know, you could put up a sign out front, is that these premises are patrolled, you know, by off-duty security. Well, off-duty security could be you leaving at night driving through the parking lot. You know, the last thing that a criminal wants is to be detected. The last thing at all. Document all reports of abuse that may occur in your church or facilities. And I want to connect that with the next one. Know the laws of your state on reporting abuse. You know, there's probably still a large number of our church leadership, not in schools, but I would say church leadership, that probably is not familiar with the fact that if they come across certain types of abuse in their church, they still feel like that's confidential information. It's privileged. It's not. It's not. I don't know of any state will protect you on that one. If you come across child abuse, spouse abuse, elderly abuse in your church, you, as an official, if you go look up especially Kentucky law, and it'll give a description of 20-some different types of persons that fall under the category of a reporting-type person, and clergy and pastor will be in there. You have to report it. And it's a good law. I like it. I really do.
The Army, everyone is considered a mandatory report.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They don't, of course, don't report it to the police. They report it to us and them.
But why in our churches today does that still happen? A lot of it isn't because our pastors are ignorant. It's because of who might be on that other end of the report. It might be someone influential in our church. Uh-oh, that's so-and-so's son or so-and-so's husband or wife. But absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, when you blatantly, on matters of abuse and other important issues like that, I mean, again, I am not bad-mouthing the Catholic Church, but let's face it. Let's look what they've been into here in the last few years. You know, they didn't even have to have the written documentations from the 60s and 70s. They still had the priest alive that would, so-and-so did come to me back in 1974 and say that Father so-and-so abused him. You know, it's there. And they didn't even have the written documentation. So what this young lady said, then you get into punitive damages. And that's what you—that's when you open up your checkbook. That's when they're going. If you've got $750,000 in the bank, it's now theirs. They're going to go after everything you got. If you've got a $3 million policy on your general liability policy, they're going to go after $3 million. If your property's worth $2 million, they're going to go after the $2 million. So, document those that you have counseled with or may be engaged in possible divorce proceedings, domestic violence. I think we covered that a few minutes ago. Anything before, I'm still on pastors, but anything on these bullet points here? Pastors, continue. Obtain documents pertaining to EPOs, DVOs. We talked about that. Document if you know of your children or youth who parents may be involved in custody battles. We briefly talked about that. But again, it's important to know. Another thing that I teach is having CCTV cameras in your hallways that go down to your child care facilities. Because again, that will show you or tell you who's going down and picking up the kids. And again, it is a very common occurrence that parents that do not have the right to do so will go, will try a church. If they know their child is in a daycare or child care at a church, they know that they will try there quicker than any other facility of daycare to try to get their child out of there. Why? Because a lot of times we're just trusting souls, and the little girl will come up, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy." And we'll just, "Oh, great." But the, you know, the other aspect is we got a lot of young people working in our child care and daycare. That's the reason why when I teach child care and daycare, I do not recommend anybody under 18 being there by themselves. There has to be an adult. An adult know what they're doing. So I teach that in some of the other training. Be aware of your surroundings. Again, I love what in that session where Tommy Ishmael talked about over there in the Legacy Center, where he talked about, if you heard him say that prior to the shooting, they had had reports of inclement weather. And so he had gone to the lady who answers the phone and say, "Listen, if you hear it go to a warning, here's our policy, here's our written documentation, here's what you need to follow, here's what you need to do." And so, it's from my daughter taking home. So know your surroundings. And again, knowing your surroundings as it pertains to documentation and investigations, this doesn't have to get real complicated. One of the basic things that I recommend our churches to do, especially our smaller churches, is those ushers and greeters or other people, carry those little pocket binders, those little notepads in your pocket. And when you're walking around the church or when you're there, write things down, but then leave those little information binders at the secretary's office or somebody's office, because then if I'm the usher or greeter that's going to work Wednesday night or the next Sunday, guess what? I can come in and read those things. I can read those notes, and I can be aware of what's going on or what has happened in the past. And that's part of knowing your surroundings. And let's face it, you know, again, a lot of things go on. If I'm an usher or greeter and service is going on and I see this same car driving through the parking lot, if I'm conscientious enough in what I teach and with ushers and greeters, if you were to come to my class tomorrow, again, document, write down that license plate number. Write down the description of the car. Write down the description of the person who's driving that car. And then make sure that your other people that's on your safety or security committee or your other pastors or your senior pastor, make sure they know about it, because these things will add up. It's not for public knowledge out here, but, you know, there's things we do here at Southern Seminary. We look at newspapers. We look at websites. We see who's not only talking about Dr. Mueller or any other professor. We see who might be talking about Southern Seminary or maybe being critical of the Southern Baptist Convention or someone associated with it. We document that. Because guess what has happened in the 9 years that I have been here? There's been times that we have seen, or somebody's written a blog, or somebody's written an email, or somebody's written a letter to the editor in their local newspaper, and then guess what happens? We have something happen here on campus that we can find out was the same guy, and then we can show that he was premeditated to cause us harm here on this campus. We call that intelligence. It's just a matter of documentation. It's just writing down pertinent information. In police work, we call that intelligence, and we got an attaboy letter in our file. Here, it's just good work. And in your church, it's just good work. It's good that if there's other churches in your community, you all are from Knoxville, you all had a shooting down there in the last year or two, right? How many were killed? But wasn't there some violence in that area at other churches before that shooting?
He was associated with that. He had a connection with that church.
Yeah.
He knew what it was. He was connected to them in some way.
Was
there was violence between him and a member, I think.
See, it's important to document. Know, be aware of your surroundings. What I'm getting to there, if there's other churches or faith-based schools in your community that is having trouble, break-ins, attempted arsons, graffiti. You know, if you're a deacon or you're on a safety or security committee, stay abreast of what's going on in your community and let the people of your church know about it. You could very well be the next target, and that's all through documentation. So, does that all make sense? So, you see where I'm going with all this? Conducting investigations, and we're going to fly through some of this. It's already 5 till. All investigations, and we're talking any investigation, whether it's a possible criminal, whether it's family-related. All investigations should be conducted by those who are in a responsible position. In other words, somebody in management, in the administration, or the pastor of that church, they need to, those that they know will keep things confidential, will be precise, will be clear, will document what is true. They need to be asked to do this type of work. Know how to keep all information confidential. We've talked about that before. Except when the police come. I truly believe that there's nothing in you, if you've called the police, there's nothing in your church is confidential if it pertains to why you called them there. You know, if you've got abuse going on and you call the police and you're going, well, wait a minute, I'm torn between what's right and what's wrong. We've got child abuse going on in my church, but that's as much as I'm going to tell you. No, it don't work like that. You've got to tell them the rest of it, the rest of the story. All reports or documents that result from an investigation must be true, precise, clear, and shared with those who need to know. Who controls these reports? Who? I mean, again, it doesn't matter the size of your church. You know, again, we've got close to 69,000 churches, evangelical churches in America. The majority of them have 100 members or less. Now, who controls these type of reports? I mean, if you've only got a 100-member church, you know, what is it, the 20% rule? 20% of the people do all the work. Well, find out who that 20% is and find the 2% of that 20, and maybe they need to see all the reports. That could very well be your church committee again, church staff, but somebody needs to review and see all of them. So do you have a safety committee, church council, or pastoral staff? Do you have templates or forms to write these reports? And that's what you're going to see in your packet. I have given you all some sample reports that we use here at Southern Seminary. And how long do you keep the reports? You know, that's a tough question. You have to make a decision. Some reports, by law, you have to keep a certain period of time if they pertain to insurance matters, accounting matters. What am I missing here, Mr. Clark? Do you know of any?
A lot of HR, we'll keep them at least a minimum of 3 years.
3 years, right. But certain things like, let's take for example, if you had a report of a car that was sitting in the parking lot, and that's the only time in a year that report came up. Well, you can probably conclude that was an isolated incident, and if you didn't want to clog up your files, then I would think it'd be a safe decision to probably, if you want. So you make your own decision on those. Incident reports that pertain to staff, employees, volunteers who work with your children or youth, again, I recommend keeping them at least 3 years. Some things we keep here at least five. So that's a decision you'll need to make.
Question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Like stuff, I'm a youth pastor.
Uh-huh.
I deal with students, and the thoughts that I have and certain problems I hold on to are things that 20 years down the road sound like some of this Catholic priest stuff where they're adults are coming out and coming after the priest. So, I mean, I'm hearing you guys talk about 3 and 5 years.
No, that's a little bit different. If I have criminal reports, number one, if I have a report of abuse, please hear me, the police is going to have that report of abuse. So, you can rest assured there's a statute of limitations on a lot of insurance matters. What happened to the Catholic Church, this was conduct that was ongoing. It was a pattern. And that's the reason why they were able to go back 10, 15, 20, 30, and 40 years and get these damages against the Catholic Church. If it's a one-time isolated incident, there's a statute of limitations on any exposure or any liability. But remember, again, you've already turned that over to the police, so you might have a very small criminal investigation. Your insurance company will tell you how long you have to keep that original report. Believe me, they have lawyers, they will tell you.
We should know what the state law is.
But again, your best source, your best resource there is your insurance or your church council. If you've got a lawyer that is either on your a paid lawyer or a retainer, but believe me, your insurance company has lawyers. They'll tell you what to do with that original report. Yeah.
In any incidences where there are potential crimes against persons, hopefully we're not going to have too much of that, so we shouldn't clog the files.
Mm-hmm. But that's a good point about the. But that's what happened with the Catholic Church. It was a continuing conduct that they just that went on and on. Yeah. Background investigations. Who conducts and documents and kept confidential? Again, even as large as we are, and is there's only a certain number of people by written policy. My office conducts them. There's only three of us in my office who can review them. If there is what we call a hit or if there's information that comes back, our policy states who we then contact and then what happens with that information. Still, no written hard copy is ever kept. So that's what we have here. You have to have a signed waiver. And again, that's a document. But what do you do with that signed waiver? How long do you all keep your all signed waivers?
If they are an employee, we will keep it
as long
the entire duration because our waiver gives us the right at any time to conduct additional checks.
Right.
If they quit, we'll keep it for a period of 1 year after their last employment day.
And again, this waiver has all their personal information on it. So, it has to be kept secure, and only a limited number of people can see it. And I can't recommend enough. Again, no matter what the size of your church is, that you have written policy when it comes to background investigation, who conducts them, who can see them, who can manage them. I mean, it you just have to. No, everything is kept electronically by the company that does our backgrounds off-site. For that reason, no one then can get a hold of it. You know what happens? People can get a hold of hard copies. That's how, you know what, if there weren't any hard copies, we wouldn't have any media out here. You know, it's just, so we don't. I don't know. Do you all keep?
Now, I will if I have to research what I have found.
Okay.
Just for records purposes, should somebody call me and say, hey, you know, what happened with this person, I can pull that easily accessible.
Okay.
But I'm the only one that would do that. It does not leave my office. And it's right here.
Yeah.
And it's under lock and key all the time. So.
And he does a couple of thousand a year. Why do a couple of hundred? So during this part, when we finish up here, if you got questions on backgrounds, please, I defer to Mr. Clark. We don't want to spend a lot of time, but again, it's because of documentation and paperwork. There's actually you can do different levels of investigation. We have one level for hourly employees, part-time and full-time. We have a different level for maybe director's level, and then we have another level that's just for faculty and executive administrative staff. Again, that's
discrimination issues with those kind of faculty levels.
As long as you're consistent, as long as you do them on everyone, and as long as you're consistent doing those levels across the board. Yeah.
And that's the key. It's okay to have multi levels, but if I, for instance, if you and I know each other and I want to hire you, I know you well enough, I'm not going to do it. Well, then that creates adverse impact for other people because I'm discriminating against everyone else. So, yes, you can do multi-level, but it has to be across the board and it has to be consistent in your policies of how you conduct those.
Or even taking one step further, she is my friend, and I'm she's applying for a position of financial secretary. But I know that the check we do for part-time custodian or whatever doesn't include a credit check. But the background check I'm going to conduct for financial secretary does, but I don't do it on her because she's told me in confidence there might be a problem there, and I do the lower one, then again, I've violated the law. Yeah, I've circumvented what the different FCRA and the other federal guidelines tell me I can do. Yeah.
How much is an average, say, for youth workers? You know, you probably want to get, you know, from what I've read in research, you want to get a deeper, you know, level besides just, you know, are they okay? Have they not committed any heinous crimes like this? And, you know, one, is there a deeper level for children and youth? And two, you know, how much is that going to cost generally, you know, for run for any company?
You know, it's going to vary by the vendor, and it varies by how deep you want to go. You know, I've got a level where I can do what's called a widescreen, where it will look for any information out in databases, but if something's found, it will go to that jurisdiction and verify whether it's the person that I requested information on or not. But it also checks my sex offender databases. So it's a very basic check, but you know, you can take it even deeper and do track the PRIMS, which measures all the counties in which you live, where you apply for credit, that sort of thing. But the more you do, the more the expense. But the thing is important, you just want to be consistent in what you do, and it's about due diligence. That if you have to stand before a court, that you want to say, yes, sir, I've done my due diligence. You know, now the court isn't going to say, well, you should have done this and this. As long as you were consistent in your processes, you know, they will understand that you've done, you know, what you felt you could do.
What's important here is what I have here, both electronic and physical. We don't only do the electronic background investigation or background check. You do the physical check, which is check their references, check their employment. When I was on the state police and we did a background investigation on a potential trooper, you had your standard three references that you would talk to, but we would literally go into their hometown. We'd go to the local sheriff, pharmacist, principal, and we had to find five other people that knew you in order for me to conduct that physical background investigation. What we do here, if we were to get anything electronically back that might, what we call a hit, or let's say if you lived in Dallas, Texas, and out of jurisdiction 14, we found a misdemeanor offense of you 3 years ago. I would then employ that same company that does the electronic background check. They have thousands of people around this country, and I have them go hand check it. And that costs a lot more money, but still, I want to make sure that the information I have on you is correct. And I'm consistent across the board. It doesn't matter if it's a level 1, 2, or 3 check. If I get disparaging information on you on electronic, and it's I can't do it myself, then I hire them to go hand check it. So I don't know if you do that, but we do here.
No, I don't go to that degree, but I will contact if I find something adverse.
Uh-huh.
You know, I will contact the individual
right.
themselves directly, and I'll share with them a copy. You know, I'll send them a copy electronically. I'll remove like social security numbers and that sort of thing, allow them to see what I'm seeing, and then we have a discussion. Hey, is this you?
And you know, everybody. We are very blessed and fortunate here at Southern Seminary. We don't come close to meeting the national average of people blatantly misrepresenting themselves on applications and other documents. But if we do get something back, keep in mind the people that we are training to be or being your pastors, being your youth ministers, being your Christian counselors, you know, we want to be fair with them. We want to do what's right in God's eyes. But at the same time, we're pretty strong on the fact, why did you misrepresent this? And that's because we want the right people to be in our churches. If that makes sense. Yeah. MVRs, motor vehicle records check here at Southern Seminary. We do them every year because people can get in trouble. Our policy is if you've got 6 points on your license, you can't drive a seminary or more. You know, up to 12, you lose your license. You can't drive a seminary vehicle. You're a liability. And this pertains, again, to investigations. That's an investigation just like checking anything else out. It's documentation. We do here, if you volunteer to be a child care provider, or even if you're one of our paid child care providers, we're going to run the same check on you.
How long does the ticket have to drop off?
In Kentucky, 5 years. Unless certain ones you can get purged if you want to pay a lawyer. Yeah. Child care and youth, again, background investigations that you just, no matter the size of your church, you know, a lot of times we'll have people come in our churches that lived in other states. You don't know who these people are. Do the background checks, both electronic and physical. Write a policy, simple policy. It doesn't have to be lengthy. A lot of times, guess what? Our people are young. You know, we all go to college at some point. Well, guess what? We come back home 3 or 4 years later. Don't be offended if the church runs another background check on you. We don't know what happened to you in those 3 or 4 years. So talk to your church and institute those type of, at least be thinking, talk about it. But that's what we recommend, yeah.
We just received information recently that background checks are good for 3 years.
On what?
In the state of Tennessee, motor vehicle records, if you've got speeding tickets or what have you, will come off after 3 years.
After three? Kentucky, it's 5, yeah. And most states have reciprocal laws, so if your license, if you've got 6 points in your license in Tennessee, you've got 6 points in your license in Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Same rule of thumb, I've heard is every 3 years.
Are you saying that they're good for 3 years?
Yeah.
You see, here, if you take another position or get promoted, when you sign that waiver, it's in the waiver that if you apply for another position or you get promoted, then we will run another background check on you.
Well, the IMD now requires, remember, if you go on an international world changes, you have to have had a background check done within 3 years. If it was longer than that, you have to have one done.
I was not under the impression that it was our church polity that I was
thought of.
The way it was presented to me was
may have been a church. policy, and that's fair. With our summer staffers, you know, we will, and volunteers at our conference centers, Glorieta and Ridgecrest, we do them annually. And if they drive as part of their duties, we will do NBRs every year on them as well. Because, like our campers and even our conference center employees, they're working around children, and we want to make sure that we're providing a safe environment from sex abuse, from poor driving skills, if you will. So, there's a lot of that going to take us on, unfortunately.
Let's try to finish up here. Insurance, I think we've talked about a lot of this. Document known physical issues. It could be an exposure liability. Worker comp reports. I mean, if you've got paid staff at your church, you've got work comp. I don't know how you can get away with it. Investigate the work comp claims. Find out why that person got injured. You know, a lot of times it could be that step that was loose, or it could be that wiring on that plug was bad that your maintenance man, Jimmy Joe, didn't get to after you gave him a notice. You know, it could be a lot of things. Investigate all your vehicle accidents and keep a record of them. Investigate and document that could result in claims that pertain to property. This is like a catch-22, but, you know, if you have documented that there's been some attempted arson at your church or some other type of crime, and then maybe you did, and you don't report it to the police, and then finally, yes, there was an arson that caused some property damage, and you want to file a claim. If your insurance company finds out that was a continuing problem, and you didn't call the police, I'm not going to say they're not going to pay your claim, but they're going to question you quite a bit. But still, be on the safe side, document everything. Investigate and document that can result in claims. I think what I'm pertaining to here, again, a lot of our church budgets are strained. And again, if there is a mechanical failure, and you had, like I mentioned at the very onset, that if you have another vendor, somebody that's worked on a part of your church, and then you have a problem and you can maybe direct that back to maybe they had caused that problem, then guess what? That's not money out of your pocket. They might file it on their own insurance, but at least you don't have to pay that $5,000 deductible or $1,000 deductible. Does that make sense? So a booklet. We talked about that. I recommend whether it's a big booklet or a small one in your pocket, develop some type of system at your church where things are documented, even if it's as simple as putting it in a booklet and it's passed on to other people. At least that's a place to start. I gave you all some sample forms in your packet that you're welcome to use. And in closing, is there any questions? I know I've kind of flown through there, but our hour has gotten away from us, and it's been a great class. You've asked a lot of good questions, and I'll stay here as long as you want to. Anything at all? I hope all of you are going to be here tomorrow. And take some more of these breakout sessions. You don't have to take mine, but we've got a lot of great speakers here. I kid you not, when I got up and said earlier today over in the Legacy Center, I have never seen an accumulation and wealth of knowledge of professional people, excluding me, that was in that room today, Mr. Clark included. I mean, this is who's who in the field of church security and safety. And I'm really hoping and praying that God will use this as a foundation to where maybe 10 years from now there might be an organization of us that we can reach out and help any evangelical church that needs help. Southern Baptist, we don't own the corner. We don't own the market on it. Close, but we don't know everything.
One thing about mission trips and that.
Yeah.
Those because, depending on the nature of the trips, they may be in close proximity to children, and that, and I know that's been a big concern of IMB as well in terms of the background check.
Right now they're just saying every 3 years, but everybody.
No.
Everybody's over 18 has to have got a
background. Yeah, if you go on a mission trip here and we're taking about 15 a year, you get a background. And even the professors, mm-hmm. we do them on everybody.
Yeah, and even myself as an employee, because I'm going on that trip, I would be checked just as anybody else.
Yeah, yeah. I'm checked. Even though I'm taking a kind of staff and checked.
Yeah, that's kind of touchy. I do the background checks and had to do one on myself to go to Haiti. I didn't do it, really.
Is there any chance I can get your email just in case, like, some of these documents?
Let me, I'll give it to you. I'll put out some of my business cards if anybody want to get, if anyone wants to get one here. I can assure you if it's pertaining to background, you can contact me, but if Mr. Clark is available.
And I've got a PowerPoint I can send you just kind of on some thoughts.
I would love a PowerPoint.
And thank you all so much. Good job.